session number 9552, reel 5.
Mr. Basil Farrer, Reel 5. Could you tell me a little more about when you first landed in Boulogne, Mr. Farrer?
Yes, well, after having my quick drink, we formed up and set off to march. We were on the quayside and we'd to march into the town of Boulogne over a bridge. And I think, marching off, going over the bridge, coming in the opposite, incidentally, then we... The streets were lined by the French crowd, and they were wild with excitement. Vive l'Angleterre, vive les Anglais, etc. All those kind of things. They were absolutely wild. And I remember a French band, whether it was a military band or not, coming towards us and past us, and I'd never seen such instruments. And the leader, it seemed rather a bit comic opera to me, but nevertheless, I remember that band passing us, and we marched on, and we marched into the town Boulogne, and then it gradually, the street gradually climbed up to the old citadel, which I don't know whether it exists still. There used to be a church or a citadel there, and a statue of a French warrior of the ancient times, the Guskling. I don't know whether that, because Boulogne suffered in the Second War very much. We marched past that and marched to a place, right out, I don't know the name, but to a field, a large field, which had been prepared. Obviously, we must have had some men over before we'd landed, because there were tents, and it was where we were going to encamp for the night. Now, there was a big column, a monument. This field and the area was the actual site where Napoleon's army encamped in the Napoleonic Wars in preparation for the intended invasion of England. In fact, it overlooked the town, the plateau, but you could just discern in the distance the English coastline. And there is, this monument commemorates the fact that this was the encampment where Napoleon's army encamped for the preparation of the invasion of England. We encamped there for the night. That was Saturday night. Sunday morning, we went up the mountain and had breakfast and all that, and we were formed up on parade in the morning. This again, I don't know whether I should say it, but we were formed up on parade at the ground, and the riot act was read out to us. Now, the riot act to us was King's regulations. That is to say, that part of King's regulations appertaining to the crimes and punishment of troops whilst on active service. And the CO, obviously, this no doubt is an order to every regiment. The CO had to read it out to the troops. The list he read out of the different crimes was pretty lengthy. Being found asleep on duty, what do you call it? Not pilfering, there's an army expression when you pinch something. I've forgotten the name. Anyhow, stealing, and you know, quite a list of things. But the penalty for every one was death. So we were warned. There's no question of ignorance if we were caught. Then the afternoon was fairly free. And I remember the camp was visited by French civilians who came up to visit and mixed with us, and we were very enthusiastic, especially with the ladies kissing the girls, and they were giving us little biscuits and bits of chocolate and things like that. That lasted for a short time. That's just a vague memory. And that's Sunday night, late in the night, we formed up and marched down to the station at Boulogne. Entrained, we didn't know, of course, where we were going. I mean, we soldiers, I'm speaking of the And it was not until the morning that we disentrained. It was at Amiens. And we, out of the train, marched a few streets, and were billeted in a school. And then we were taken to what I think had been a girls' school, which was obviously intended to be converted into an hospital. And I found that I had been posted, the group I was with were the group for this hospital. And we'd finally, we were to staff this hospital.
What was this unit to be called?
Now, I, honest, I'd, whether it was a general, number 7 general hospital, that's just a big thing. Number 7 general hospital.
And you, can you remember any larger unit you may have been part of in either the RAMC or
no,
in the actual army?
No, not at that time.
So you're, just at this moment you're a little vague on the units.
Yes, but it was a hospital to be formed in. In fact, wounded were arriving there eventually. That was after Mons had started during the retreat. So we arrived there, as I say, 14th. 16th was Sunday. We arrived there on the 17th. Coming back from this building, which we were forming into an hospital, back to our billet, which was a school, the sergeant major dished out, that's an army expression, gave out field postcards. We eventually called them deaf and dumb cards. There were messages: I am well, I am not well, I have been wounded, I am in hospital. But all you got to do, cross out everything that didn't apply and leave only the message that applied. Now, this was the 18th of August. I sent one home, and I don't know, I've got the card there.
You showed it me, yes.
Yes. 18th of August, from Amiens. Anyhow,
it had a stamp embossed on it. That's unusual, isn't it?
Well, they'd been prepared in England. Whether they'd been that kind of card had been used in the South African War, I don't know. But they'd been prepared in it. They'd been printed in England, and that's extraordinary. They got that stamp's obliterated with the field post, army field post stamp, otherwise. But it's embossed. True, it's ridiculous. An English stamp from France, but they were using probably the only issue they had at the time. Eventually, they reprinted those without stamps, and they went through the Army Postal Service.
Had you ever seen these cards before?
Never. That was the first I'd seen.
What did you think of them this first time then? Did you think they were useful or?
Well, I don't think we took them and read them and such and crossed out, and I just left in I am quite well, signed it Basel, and sent it off home, because my family wouldn't know where I was. They wouldn't know I was in France.
Now, you were setting up a hospital, you say.
Yeah.
How did you go about setting up a hospital, and how was your unit organised to do that, if you can remember it?
Only I cannot, frankly. I couldn't describe it. We must have had beds sent amongst the equipment sent over. I don't remember them. I do remember the first wounded. And it was a soldier at the back. And I remember thinking, oh my God, fancy being shot in the back. That seemed as though it was something that shouldn't be done, to be shot in the man was. But I remember that was the first wounded man I'd seen. Now, that must have been after the 20th. We must have been there a week then, because we landed the Sunday, the 14th. Sunday was the 16th. The Battle of Mons was fought on the 23rd, and that was our first encounter. So it must have been during that week after Mons, and the retreat was on the way, and one or two wounded were already arriving at this hospital. We were patching them up, or already been patched up before, but just attending, changing their bandages and taking them to the station, and that was that.
What was your role in this? Were you still on the clerical side, store side, or were you back
no,
in?
No, I was general, just a general's dog body. I had no precise, no definite role. I don't remember having a definite role. Just did whatever I was told. We didn't have a ward of wounded. We hadn't ward fellows lying in there wounded. We hadn't had time. When the Battle of Mons had been fought, wounded, we weren't the only place of evacuation, that was the station, but we'd only, I don't remember, I only remember seeing this one wounded man, there may have been others.
So you were just a staging post, really, on the...
Really, yes, it was of which I have very little memory, and we must have been there almost a week, and the Jerrys must... We didn't know Jerry was approaching, we didn't know there was a retreat... We in Amiens didn't know there was a retreat on. We had no idea. Especially the old soldier. And me, as a young boy, wasn't that inquisitive to inquire what's happening. We just thought the war was going on, and there it was. But then, we had to evacuate the hospital. And I do remember, only one, I don't remember whether anymore, but I remember a stretcher on some wheels with a wounded man on, not in a motor car, we didn't have a motor ambulance in those, pushing him like that to the station. Right from, it might have been a quarter of a mile, or I don't know, I've forgotten the distance, but quite a distance to the station, through the streets. And we embarked that night in the station at Amiens. Another thing I remember there, looking out, we were in carriages, we were in a passenger train. As a rule, troops were transported in, as you know, in wagons. But I remember on the platform, now, this is just a side issue, and I was astonished. It's funny why it should have been, but I do remember the toilets, there were probably more than one, there must have been, but Damen und Herren, now that's German. I remember that in Amiens station, seeing Damen und Herren. Why, I don't know. Anyhow, we took entrained. We disentrained at Rouen. We were there, that's not far from Havre. We were there practically the whole day, sitting in the station, and it was quite as you might say, a distraction. The only distraction was the frequent passage of trains from Paris to Le Havre, chocked with American tourists. Of course, soldiers being scroungers, we were after them. They gave us cigarettes and fruit and things like that. But they're continually passing to our for a ship to the USA. We too, eventually that evening, entrained, to Le Havre.
By now, did you know there was a retreat on? Had you gathered that?
I personally don't remember knowing there was. I didn't know what was happening. And
did you see any sign of chaos or confusion?
No. I didn't know what all these Americans were passing through like that, but they were certainly in a hurry to leave France. But as a young... I must have been rather daft and naive, but it didn't occur to me that... I don't remember that. I might have been aware there was a retreat on.
Did you notice any confusion
amongst the staff, ourselves and our officers, things were just normal.
You got your rations normally.
We got rations normally. We arrived at Rouen, and then from Havre we marched, a hang of a long march it was, to a place called Harfleur. Harfleur, yes. Because on the other side of the river, it's a bit confusing, on the other side of the river there's Honfleur, but this is Harfleur, where eventually a big military camp was built. We marched as far as there. There was there wasn't the camp that it eventually became. We were there a couple of days, maybe a day or two, down again to the docks, and on a ship. The ordinary soldier didn't know anything what was happening, why we were on the ship, out, eventually sailed, right down the channel, there's the Constantin Peninsula there, where Cherbourg is, round there, down into the Bay of Biscay, to Saint-Nazaire. And I do remember, when we arrived at Saint-Nazaire, just as we were entering, a terrific storm, thunder and lightning, And I do remember being a bit scared there out at sea with this terrific storm. I'd never been out at sea in a storm like that and in the Bay of Biscay. Anyhow, we arrived safely in Saint Nazaire. We disembarked, marched to a camp there. We must have stayed 2 days at least, because I remember the next day as going down to the sea and having a bathe in the sea. Then we may have been there a couple of days. We entrained, and the train took us right away up. And I remember going through, I think it was Nantes, and the train seemed to go through the streets. In the streets, it didn't. I remember that. This is anyhow. The termini of the train was a place called Villeneuve Saint Georges. Villeneuve Saint Georges is a big railway siding south of Paris, you know, sidings. And it was there we got off the train, and I there again. Naturally, we didn't know we were there. We were confined to the area of the sidings. We weren't allowed to leave the, go into the village or whatever it was, Villeneuve Saint Georges. But I remember seeing, at least I think I remember seeing the Eiffel Tower in the far distance. Oh, incidentally, before we arrived at Paris, I do remember passing Versailles and the Palace of Versailles, because there was a big pond there, the name of which I learned many years later. That's why I knew it was the pond where the Swiss Guard during the Revolution were all drowned or something. It was called the pond. The word for pond is in French. Oh, zoot. Le Lac de Suisse. Le Lac de Suisse. Little lake, you see. I remember passing that. Anyhow, that was before we arrived at Villeneuve Saint Georges. And it was there, they were apparently forming ambulance trains. We hadn't got the equipped ambulance trains that we eventually had real proper with all the equipment on board. These were all makeshift, and we were using Wagon Lee, the company, the Wagon Lee trains, where there's bunks and things like that, and
for sleepers trains. Yes.
And I was posted to number 5 ambulance train. Now, number 5 ambulance train was mixed. There were French on board. What they call a French medicine major is a French medical officer. It's titled medicine major. And there were 2 French orderlies. I know there were 2. One was called, I remember he was called Paul Boncoeur, and that he lived in the Rue de Turenne, Paris. I never tried to find him. And the other was a little Titi Parisian. When I say Titi Parisian is a name like a London Cockney. And I might mention this just as a bit of a, you know, I remember he taught me the words of the International. But every time he taught me, he'd look round, because had he been caught, he'd have probably been shot another time as a communist. I remember, and I still know them. C'est la lutte finale, group of new Abdema, and the old damn thing. And he taught it me, this other French orderly. And there was our own medical officer, and myself, and probably a couple of RMC. So we were a mixed crew on that. And
That's all there was in the whole train of
on
medical?
The old train, yes. And of course, it was a corridor train, being by me.
How many people would it? How big was the train? How many people would it hold on board? How many patients?
Oh, let me see. Honestly, it would have to be a very hazardous guess. Oh, I couldn't say the number. Honestly, I couldn't. But there would be 7 or 8 carriages. Now, that's only a guess. I don't remember counting them. I honestly don't remember counting them. It wouldn't be too long, because we were slow enough as it was. It would have, if it was too long. And that I don't remember, truly. At the time, now this was early September, in the very early days of September. As I've told you, I remember, or think I remember, seeing the Eiffel Tower. And another thing I think I remember, the very first air raid on Paris. And it was by a German plane, a number, I don't know how many, might mean only 3, 4, or 5. What they call Taubes. T-A-U-B-E. Have you heard of it? There was a raid on Paris. And I saw them passing. From Boulogne Saint-Georges. I saw. So it was on that date, in the 2nd, 3rd, or 4th of September. The bus of the Marne was on. And then we moved off in that direction. And the rail...
Did you see anything else of the raid on Paris,
no,
other than the planes going past?
I could just see in the distance these planes. A long, thin, like a pencil.
So then you moved off towards the Marne, you said?
The Marne. And I remember us going through fields and fields of grapes. The harvest, the Vendage, and it's generally in September, all the men were mobilised. It hadn't been taken. And I'd never seen fields of grapes before like this. I remember that. And the rail aid was a place called... We did stop for a few minutes at a place called Fisme. F-I-S-M-E. And there were French troops. And French cavalry. But French cavalry, you'd think we were back in the Napoleonic days. With the helmet and the horse's tail... breastplates, red uniforms and blue uniforms. In fact, our review, like our hussars and things that we had, they went to battle in that. They were at Fisme.
What did you think of that sort of uniform behaviour? Did you comment on it? Did it seem ridiculous to you at the time, or in retrospect, did it seem ridiculous?
Really, I couldn't. I'd have to... no, even with Isaac. I don't remember how the effect it had on us. But they were there, and there were French soldiers. We fraternised a little bit, and, you know, bits of English-French, and try. We were only there 5 or 10 minutes, and it was just a stop. Why? I don't know. And we continued on to a place called Braine. B-R-A-I-S-N-E. That was the railhead. And there we started taking on wounded. From the I don't know how far they'd come, but we came under fire, and that was my first experience. Big, right overhead, whopping big black bursts, and we call them Black Johnsons. Why Jack Johnsons? Why we call them Jack Johnsons? This big black mess, because just before the war, or some a year or so before the war, a fella in. American Negro, Jack Johnson, had knocked out Dempsey. Big, massive thing. So we christened these shells Jack Johnsons, a terrific high explosive from black, right over us. And that was my first experience of being under fire.
What did you think of it?
Well, I just gave it up. Of course, I was new to that. We were all new. And I made a remark, which it's a wonder I wasn't put under arrest, because I saw one of the officers dart under the train. And I said to him, Jim, look at the officer dying. And I think he heard me, because I saw him look in my direction. I thought it was damn silly to hide, but I jolly soon learned you had to do. But that was my first reaction to shell fire. I didn't. I was innocent. Innocent.
It didn't frighten you much, though?
It didn't frighten me. My God, I got frightened later. Very, very often scared stiff. But that first experience didn't frighten me, because I didn't know what I didn't know the effect of French shellfire, and after when I learned and saw what it could do, it's a different story. But that was my first experience under shellfire.
Was there much shelling, or was it an occasional shell?
We only stayed there until we'd loaded the train, and off we went. So they probably might have been a daily affair. So we were in shelling distance of it.
Would you load the train, or did other people load the train and you just get on with looking after
them? No, we took the stretchers. I've forgotten now. I've honestly forgotten how they arrived in the station, because we didn't have ambulances then. Not to my recollection. Not as we eventually motor ambulances, you know. There was very little motorised stuff then. Very little in 14. I mean, all the artillery was horse-drawn. The regiment and transport was horse-drawn. And our mules, we used a lot of mules, too. They're obstinate, they were. And we... Our, the landed we, with the stretcher, took them to the train, got them on board, and placed them in the. If they were walking wounded, there were carriages without the pull down things for the just the ordinary first or second class wagon on the carriages. But if there were stretch cases, then we'd pull them down, put them on the bunks, on the lower bunk, and until the train was had its complement of wounded, and off we'd move. And the officer would go round to the wounded, particularly, first of all, the stretch cases, to see where they were. And the journey back, we'd go right back to Saint-Nazaire, would take a day or so. So the officer would.
What was the condition of these troops when they arrived? Because they'd just been on the retreat and now they were going back to the Battle of Marne around the 6th of September. What condition were they in besides their wounds? Did they show any evidence of fatigue or.
I'd be wrong to personal opinion now, Frank. Honestly.
It was
a long time and been. When I say. Perhaps men. With experience, grow observant, but I wasn't a very so observant. I mean, I didn't recollect this thing, and I didn't. When you got, and you know, when you go to war, you could be killed, so you don't think of things to relate. In there's certain things that come to the surface, the same as these personal incidents that I might relate, but the ordinary life, it comes. You don't take particularly notice of. Therefore, you have no recollection of it.
What did, you were a young lad. What did you? How did you react to all these wounded men and having to look after them? And did it affect you in any way?
I remember the first effect. Now there was one man, and I was with the MO, and he was laid out, and you could see his brain. The top of his head was off, practically. And I was with the doctor. The doctor was attending to him, and I was. And I know I don't know whether I passed out or not, but I felt like passing. I know it was. I felt horrible. I do remember the effect of the first, that horrible wound, that fellow's brain. You could see his brain, but he was still alive. I think the doctor was giving him morphia, and then coming into him. He died before we got to Saint-Nazaire. He died. But that was my first experience with the serious. And I do remember that it had a very sickly effect on me. I would have liked to, you know, but I didn't. And now I was stuck at it. I don't know. But I do know, remember that it did have an effect, a very sickly and ghastly effect on me.
Did the sight of all these wounded change any of your attitudes to the war? I mean, did you start to take a more serious approach?
No. A subsequent events prove I was still young and the wounds now. And I didn't see too close enough too many of them. I was merely a stretcher bearer more than them. But on that occasion, on the train, with this chap, with his brains nearly showing, I'd never seen anything like it in my life before. It's like being like a medical student attending a post mortem for the first time in his medical career, you know, and seen, because I've seen him. I'll relate that later. It's just come to mind.